Hello, Northumberland County. This is Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7 FM's Real Estate Talk Show. I'm Dale Bryant, and I'm an active real estate broker with Royal LePage Pro Alliance Realty Brokerage. And Reality Realty is your local real estate forum, where we take on, we talk about, and we interview guests on all things real estate with a direct focus on Northumberland County and the communities within it. Joining me this morning as co-host is the producer of today's show, Allie Clark. Allie, thanks for joining me as a co-host this morning.
Oh, no problem, Dale.
So, Allie, you are, for the listeners, you are a...
Port Hope High School student. I've been co-oping with you since, I guess, end of September in all things real estate.
Yeah, so Allie's been helping me with my real estate business. Allie, you've done things. What sort of things have you done as a co-op student with me?
Well, I guess some of my favorite things are going to see the different homes, seeing the staging, the before and after. I really like enjoying seeing other homes.
And what do you think about doing a market analysis?
Oh, the market analysis, that was a lot of fun, I guess. A lot of math.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit more math than you thought might be involved
definitely.
In something. Yeah. But, you did one all on your own, and we've worked on a number of others together, and you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
And yesterday, you had your market analysis that you did at your career fair at the library of the Port Hope High School. And how did that career fair go?
The career fair was fun. It was an opportunity for all the younger kids in our school to come see all the co-op placements and all the other opportunities that they can have for co-op.
Yeah, and you did a really nice job of your
Thank
display.
You.
I thought it really reflected what you've been doing in the real estate over these past 3 months or so.
Yep.
And we're working together until when, Allie?
Till, I think, middle of January?
Somewhere in there. Yeah, absolutely. So, I just want to do a shout-out to a very special person in my life. I want to do a shout-out and a happy birthday to my daughter, Laura Ashley Bickle.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, it's her birthday today, so yeah, happy birthday, Laura. Allie, what do we have for today's show?
Well, on today's show, we're going to have the guest, my dad, Cameron Clark. He's a Port Hope beef cattle farmer. And we're going to be talking about what determines the value of farmland, how farmland prices have changed over the past 10 years, and if you're considering farming as a livelihood, what you can be looking for, and then the regular snapshot segment and points to ponder.
Yeah, and we do on Reality Realty, we mostly do residential real estate. We've done commercial real estate a few times. So this is our first time that we've actually looked at farmland. And great idea, Allie. There's a great show coming up. And yeah.
Thank you. So Dale, why don't you start us off with a snapshot of today's residential real estate market in Northumberland County?
I absolutely will. So when we take a look at a snapshot of today's market, first thing we like to look at is how many listings have sold over the past month. How active has our market been in residential real estate? And we've had 83 sales over the past month. And presently on the market, our inventory is 331 listings. Now, if we want to get a larger picture of what's happened in Northumberland County, we could look over the past 12 months. And we've had 1,378 sales in Northumberland County over the past 12 months. And, Allie, that averages to about 20, well, the average is to exactly 26.5 per week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 20. Now, I do this, Allie, all the time. I live it, I breathe it every day, day in, day out, 7 days a week. And yet, when I look at a number like that and I think, every week in our small Northumberland County, I mean large geographically, but small for population, 26.5 per week.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot. And I guess, I not only guess, but I know I should be happy about that as a realtor.
Yes, you should be.
And those homes that sold over the past 12 months, on average, they were asking approximately $310,000. And they were receiving approximately $300,000 upon sale. So people were receiving on average, approximately 97% of their asking price in a market time of 69 days. So if you're wondering how many days does it take to sell on average a residential home in Northumberland County, on average 69 days. And it is, as it has been for months, a seller's market with a 25% absorption rate. So if you're thinking of buying or selling a home, this is the kind of information that's important to you, but you're not going to want this general information. You're going to want this information that's more specific to the actual area you're in, the type of home you're looking at, and the price band you're looking in. So talk to your local realtor to understand the Northumberland market information that's most relevant to you. The statistics and the information required to calculate the absorption rate come to us from the Northumberland Hills Association of Realtors. Today's mortgage rates, 2.59% is the best 5-year fixed, and 2.15% is the best 5-year variable. And these mortgage rates come to us from mortgage broker Carol Ann Bryant with the Broker Financial Group. So, Allie, points to ponder. So here's where we just pick a one or two or three different little points that at least I find interesting.
Yes.
And so our first one here, just after last week's show, there was a new down payment rule for homes over $500,000. Our Liberal government announced last Friday that there would be a change in the down payment structure when purchasing a home over $500,000. Okay, and presently, and until February 15, 2016, so for a while, the down payment has been as low as 5%. After February 15, 2016, the 5% will still apply for the first $500,000 of the purchase price, but anything above the $500,000 will be a 10% down payment. And so this will force people that are buying these pricier homes to have a little more equity in their home, and that the government says is good for the stability of our housing market, that people have more skin in the game and are less likely to walk away from that investment. It's good in a sense that it's not going to affect first-time home buyers so much, unless first-time home buyers are fortunate enough to be buying something over $500,000. And areas like our own in Northumberland County, Allie, where we just talked about the average price being $300,000, not going to affect most of us. And it is predominantly aimed at large centers like Toronto, like Vancouver, where you just don't get so much for $500,000.
Exactly.
Yeah. The next point is to ponder. I'm taking a look at dysfunctional reality shows on television. Do you think there's any, Allie?
Dysfunctional reality shows?
Yeah.
There's tons.
Yeah, yeah. So this one I'm looking at is actually the American News.
American News.
News, yeah. Hmm. And this dysfunctionality is even creeping into Canada now and again. And why? Because it's concerning Donald Trump. Donald Trump. So, Allie, we talked about Donald Trump.
Yes, we did.
Just a week and a half ago. Did you know who Donald Trump was?
I did not until you told me.
Yeah, and what did you tell me when I said, I can't believe you don't know who Donald Trump is? What was your answer?
Well, I'm a teenager. Most teenagers don't listen to the radio or the news.
Exactly. And and when you said that, you know what? I thought, you're right. Okay. But we did talk about Donald Trump. And so Donald Trump has been doing himself a lot of talking. And he's done so much talking and said so many comments that are offending large groups of people that he works with this Dubai real estate partner. And his partner in Dubai has removed the Trump name from all advertising on this $6 billion golf club, golf complex project. So the news of him isn't just creeping into Canada, it's even creeping into Dubai.
All over.
Yeah, and I'm not going to ask you on the air if you know where Dubai is.
I think I know where
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, you got an idea. You know what?
And close, I have an idea.
Yeah, and close is good for that. So that is another point to ponder. Donald Trump and all his drama as of lately, and it's affecting him in real estate. My last point to ponder, Ali, is from the pages of REM magazine, real estate magazine. And Ali, if I asked you to go and measure a room, how long and how wide yeah. it is, and then I went in after you and I measured the room, would we come up with the same measurements, do you think?
I would hope so.
You would hope so. And there could be tricks to it, because it could be an irregular shaped room and you might be wondering which wall to measure from.
Yeah.
Or there could be an open concept where it's an open concept is a combination kitchen, dining room, living room. And so you're going to make a judgment call mm-hmm. as to where the kitchen stops and the dining room starts. But typically we should be close, right?
Yes.
Well, the Alberta Real Estate Association is looking into residential property measurement issues right now because they've recently had fines levied on realtors for misrepresenting the size of condominiums in their real estate listings.
Oh, wow.
So I think this is beyond what, you know, just a judgment call where one room starts and stops.
Yeah.
Is what happened there for them to actually be fined. So the Alberta Real Estate Association is looking for provincial standards and clarity on what to include when measuring a room. I personally think that the standards are there. I think we need more education on how to follow those standards
yeah.
and maybe a little more education on ethics and not trying to grow a room.
Yeah.
larger on our listing just to make it seem better. So I guess the points to ponder on that very last one is if you're a buyer and you're bringing over a piece of furniture, say, and a room size is critical when you're viewing homes, bring your tape measure.
Yeah.
You know, do your own due diligence and check that listing. Mm-hmm. Just double check that listing measurement. So, Ali, those are points to ponder this morning.
All right. Well, Dale, I'd like to introduce our guest this morning.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be talking about farm real estate and the value of farmland. Our guest this morning is my dad, Cameron Clark, the Port Hope beef cattle farmer. Welcome, Dad.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning.
Can you tell us a bit about your farming operation?
Well, it's really a mixed farm where we keep approximately 100 pregnant females and a cow-calf herd and do about 200 to 300 acres of cash crop each year as well. So it's mixed, really. But,
yeah.
but beef is, the selling of beef calves is probably the primary source of income for sure.
All right. And what are some factors that determine the value of farmland, would you think?
Well, I think it's the same in any thing of real estate. It's location, location, location. And the more pressure there is for land, because it's they don't make it anymore, the mm-hmm. the higher the supply. It's a commodity, I've always figured, the same as anything else, and it's supply and demand.
So
Cameron, it's location. If we think more specifically, I mean, would you agree that location closer to the GTA?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and what would you say about proximity to 401 when you go north and south?
Yep, that can be as well. I mean, along this corridor here is obviously, mm-hmm. if we look long-term, and any farm that's purchased is essentially a long-term investment,
mm-hmm.
that maybe obviously the 401 corridor is more sought after than as you know, drift further north, for sure.
Yeah, and one of the things when I first was in real estate, and I thought this was odd, but it's turned out to be true from the sales that I witness, is a Lakeview can even affect the price of farmland. And oddly enough, because you think, well, it's the farmer who's in their farm machinery. And so how much is that farmer willing to pay for that Lakeview while they're going back and forth on the farmland?
It's speculation for
yeah.
sure. It's long term, because buying or operating a farm is a lifelong pursuit, really, is what it is. So the purchase of land has to be looked at perhaps trading it, you know, 40 years down the road or 30 years down the road when there might, when there is pressure from non-farmers to purchase the land.
Exactly. And so that farmland could end up being an executive's type subdivision, and then that land definitely is the Lakeview becomes very much a factor in that. So yeah.
So Dad, what are different types of soil do you prefer, or what different types of soil do we have in Northumberland County?
Well, we have we can run the entire gauntlet. There's low land, there's heavy clay loams, and as you go north, there's coarse sandy soils as well. So it can go and stony, yeah. You know, poor marginal land. So we've got everything from top class clay loam to, you know, it'd be considered marginal swamp and such.
Now, Cameron, I did a Points to Ponder segment a number of months ago, and we were looking at, in that segment, I was looking at solar farms. And, you know, it just struck me odd because we seem to value our farmland so much, and we, you know, the municipalities, the governments really don't want that to deplete. At least they say that out loud. And then when you see acres and acres being taken up by these solar farms, I thought that's a curious thing. So I noticed in my research that the Ontario Federation of Agriculture, they class farmland from in seven classes, one being the best quality and seven being a lesser quality. Is that sort of grading something that local farmers are familiar with when looking at land?
Yeah, it's, I mean, a lot of the land locally people have a experience with or some such thing. To say the solar farms and the green energy that seems to take precedence sometimes, mm-hmm. over maybe the savior of farmland, which is to me kind of a ridiculous thing. If, you know, you simply just drove out through Ontario and looked at farmland there, I've always thought that southern Ontario itself is such a small farming area that really the valuing it for farmland might be kind of naive when you can simply go west, you know, 1,000 miles, and my goodness, the farmland there is tremendous in the west.
Just the vastness of it.
Yes, oh, for sure, yeah. For sure, absolutely.
And if it, just back up a bit on the factors that determine the value, if it's used for livestock as opposed to cash crops, is there a difference in value there?
Yeah, oh, I think so. I mean, livestock has always traditionally been placed on more marginal type land, and the cash crop has been grown on maybe the higher end land. But anymore, that seems to be changing, and the quality, the marginal or top quality farmland pricing, it's tightening itself up, really.
And so are farmers looking at land more now and being willing to make improvements to the land, add nutrients or change pH levels or whatever it takes, removing rocks? Are they willing to do that more now than in previous years?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, commodities have been, you know, at a decent mark for the last couple of years, and livestock as well. So with tile draining and large machinery to clean up fence bottoms and such, there is a lot of improvement going on in the area, for sure, of the farmland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that totally makes sense. Totally makes sense.
You've been listening to Reality Realty, Northumberland's 89.7 FM's local real estate talk. Join us after this break. We'll continue to talk with Cameron Clark about the market values of farmland and what we can possibly expect to see in the future.
Welcome back. This is Northumberland 89.7 FM Reality Realty with Dale Bryant and Allie Clark. And our guest today is Cameron Clark. And Cameron is a Port Hope beef cattle farmer. And Allie, because we're doing a segment today on farmland and the values of farm, I thought I would do a mini version of our snapshot of the residential market. I thought I'd do a little snapshot of our farm market, yep, over the past year. So if we take a look at the farm listings that have sold over the past year, we actually only have 7 sales recorded on the Northumberland Hills board. And those farms that sold, those 7 farms that sold, they were anywhere from 25 acre farms to 153-acre farms last year. And if we take a look at the most recent trend over the past 2 months, one of those seven actually sold in the past 2 months. Right now, we have three listings, farm listings for sale. And if we take a look, so that's our inventory right now. If we take a look at the average listing price of farm real estate that sold over the past year, on average, they were asking $789,000. And the selling price on average was $693,000. So those farms that successfully sold over the past year were receiving approximately 88% of their asking price in a market time of 174 days. So if we take a look at what kind of market that is, it's definitely a seller's market because the absorption rate is at 33%. And traditionally speaking, anything above 20% is considered a seller's market.
So, Dad, before the break, we were talking about the different types of soil in Northumberland. On our farm, what type of soils do we have?
We run probably the full gamut. I mean, at the south end of the farm, it's decent clay loam, but as you move to the back, it can get quite coarse and marginal. Like, I think that kind of lends itself to the livestock operation, the idea of of mixed farming, utilizing it for its full potential.
And would you say it's fair to say that farmland is often bought and sold from farmer to farmer privately and without the use of a real estate agent?
No, I would absolutely agree with that. There's farmers, I guess, are fiercely independent, and if there is a farm that comes for sale, it's usually 9 times out of 10 because there is so much leased farmland that if the owner wants to see it maintained as a farm, that they'll sell it or to a neighbor or the person that's the farmer that's leasing it, because leasing land now is a very large part of any operation.
Yeah, and I would totally agree with that, because it's just a natural fit. The farmer is already in communication with the person who presently owns the land, and why wouldn't you just ask that farmer who's already making good use of that land, would you like to buy it, because I would like to sell it now. And in all likelihood, you have your buyer right there. They're already on the land. And the other thing I wonder too, Cameron, is as a bit of a tight-knit group in the farming industry and in our community, I'm sure you hear through the grapevine, or through the cornfields or whatever it might be, when somebody's thinking of retiring. You know, everybody knows who everybody is, and that maybe they're getting to an age where they'll be looking at packing things up in the future and scaling down to something more manageable. So would that talk be going on and also be accommodating private farm sales?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There's a certain relationship, especially any long-term lease of a land, that there's a relationship with the owner and a personal that goes along with it. So it's a natural progression for that land just to get moved on. Like you say, it is a small community. When you do hear of, when there is listings, like I see your listings are quite low, or that in Northumberland County are quite low.
Yeah.
I would question those listings if they're actually from a farmer as opposed to a landowner, which is totally different. There's so much land owned now by non-farmers that those are probably more likely to be listings from non-farmers than they are farmers.
Yeah, and there could be a mix there. You're absolutely right. Somebody who owns that farmland doesn't farm it themselves, maybe went to the farmer who has been leasing it. That farmer wasn't interested, and now it's for sale. And the other thing is, it's not those figures. I mean, when we do it, a snapshot of the residential market, we're bang on accurate. When I do a snapshot like that, I know there's so many sales that go on that it aren't reflected in that. So, I mean, whenever I do a market value assessment on farmland, I don't just do it from our system. I absolutely call up some farmers and say, hey, what do you think about this, and what have you heard people are paying lately and what have you been paying lately, and that's really important to get an update that way. And the other thing I'm thinking, Cameron, on our stats that I just read out there, market time, you know, what the stuff that hit the real estate listings, our average time was 174 days. I'm sure it's far less when you get a call from somebody personally in a private sale.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the deal could have, and essentially a lot of those deals could have been done a year or two previous to till the actual changing hands of, you know, that we have an agreement or something where maybe you could, the owner might be carrying a certain portion of the mortgage and, you know, that type of, it's relationship really is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Cameron, over the past 10 years, how would you say the value of farmland has been changing?
Oh, I think it's just raising by leaps and bounds, really. It's just, it never ceases to amaze me what some farms will be listed for and trade hands at the kind of value that they're assessing on this land. I mean, just around the corner from me, there was a 50-acre parcel. The house was, well, the house, they was in pretty rough repair, and it still brought in excess of $12,000 an acre. And that would be considered, you know, it wasn't class one, but it was decent farmland for sure, but it was only 50 acres. And to bring that kind of value is tremendous.
Yes. And what would you say the reasoning is for this huge increase per year over the past? And when would, is 10 years a reasonable number? Would you say that's an accurate look at the space and time that has been increasing, or would it be more or less? Or?
No, I think a decade essentially is a pretty good view of it, and it value of this land now it really isn't based on farming and what a farmer can profit from it. It's more about what he can afford to handle for debt load, because to buy a farm to think that farm itself will pay for it, that's pretty naive thinking, because it takes a massive amount of equity and an operating business to pay for the purchase of that farm, with so many non-farmers moving into the area, moving in from the, you know, closer to the GTA, they're coming down here with large amounts of equity, as the real estate markets in those areas have been high too, and purchasing land, which is competition is what it is, supply and demand.
For sure. And now I was talking to a farmer just a little over a year ago. And we were talking about the values of farmland, and he mentioned that the farmers have been doing really well in the past few years in sales of the produce that, you know, is caught when we go there to the grocery store and we're paying for our produce and our foods, that we're paying quite a bit of money, and the farmers have been grateful for that because it's not always like that, and it can go in cycles. He mentioned something to the effect that corn is king. I remember he said, does that sound like a common phrase?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, traditional cash crops in the area of wheat, corn, soybeans, the commodity prices have been good, you know, over the last few years. I mean, they have deflated a little bit this year, but there is potential there that they're going to rebound again in the next short while, and livestock has really jumped in the last couple of years tremendously. So there is some on-farm profitability for sure, and with that becomes your equity gets higher, and you know the availability there to perhaps buy another piece.
Yeah. If you're being paid decently for what you're producing, you, like you say, you can possibly afford to purchase some more of this land. And
yes,
and,
yes.
A little bit of a battle for growing.
All right, so over the next 10 years, how do you think the value will change?
I can't see it change, really. That it'll just keep climbing and keep climbing. I mean, we're very, very close to a large urban area, and we're just on the cusp of that. And as this continues to happen, that I can't see much of a change other than just continuing to go higher and higher. Because it never fails. Every few months, you hear some land being sold either farmer to farmer or through a listing, and you're almost... You can't believe it, the type of value that they're talking about.
Yes, and that's what I'm hearing and seeing myself. But I do know, like, heading into 2015, when we were at the end of 2014, I do know from talking to some people that they were, you know, and back to this corn is king, with corn being so versatile in its uses. And this particular farmer was telling me that there was an overproduction of corn, that basically the stockpiles, you know, were overflowing, and that was going to greatly affect the corn prices. And he basically said, you know, other cash crops, other farming business would be affected by that, and it would sort of all follow. And so 2015, possibly a little less growth than, would you say?
Perhaps, but again, I don't think we can really value farmland at farm profitability.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said it's a commodity,
mm-hmm,
that's just supply and demand, and farmers are really essentially the only business people who own one business, being, say, the farm they're on, and they'll buy another business, essentially another farm, and let the first business pay for the second business. But it's expansion,
right,
and farming, the old term of farmers, you live land poor, and you struggle to make the payments. And, I mean, interest rates right now are tremendous, too, so that,
yeah,
that could be another factor that's pushing this land as well.
Yeah, so that would help. And how does the value of farmland change, whether it's... Okay, so we already talked about that. We already talked about whether you're using that farmland for planting crops, raising cattle. You already mentioned that the tendency would be more value for cropland.
Yes, cropland.
And so if you are in your particular business where a great deal of your farming is in the cattle and, mm-hmm, livestock,
mm-hmm,
then I guess that would open up more possibilities for land when you're looking at farmland to...
Yeah, get use of it, because livestock, yeah, in a pasture setting or such thing, they can make use of the marginal land.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that window or that gap in the pricing, it's shrinking and shrinking every day, that there's some awful, what I would call, poor farms, marginal farms, trading for terrific money. But that just goes to show that it's really not based on farming. It is based on supply and demand. They don't make land anymore.
No.
And there is so much demand now from non-farmers and people that are moving out from city areas that want to own a piece of land. And there's some good equity coming down, especially from the GTA. It's pretty easy for these people to purchase.
So if you're living land poor, as mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. said, and it is difficult to finance the whole operation, because it's basically go big or go home, mm-hmm, right, mm-hmm, nowadays, at least the farmer today could be comforted in the fact that they know they have a good retirement fund.
Yes,
being set up.
That essentially can be the way it's looked for, right? Farmers don't really traditionally have expensive tastes. Their expensive tastes are kept to the land they have, or perhaps the machinery that they drive.
Combines.
Yeah. There's yes. It's easy to get caught up in that type of thing.
And I'm just curious as well, because sometimes you see farmers, they have their tractors, their large machines heading down the road. Obviously, they've either purchased land that's not abutting to their own, or maybe they're leasing land that they're working that doesn't isn't right beside their own. How far is a farmer willing to travel in that machinery to get to other land? And I guess part of it would be depending on how much other land there is, right?
Yes. I mean, there's some large farms that I know of that operate, you know, from Prince Edward County to north of the Brooklyn area, and they float machinery down. I mean, to find good soil in large chunks, especially for cash crop operations, it's hard to come by. And so traveling, you know, 10, 15, in this fellow's case, maybe 60 miles. It's possible, you know, and that's what they look for. It's large chunks of land where they can make an expansion, because it's tremendously hard, especially in the cash crop, to expand, just mm-hmm. because of competition from other farmers for leasing land and to purchase it as well. So it's very tough to expand, especially a cash crop operation.
Mm-hmm.
So people are willing to travel quite a long ways for it.
And when you say floating it down, so you're not driving the machinery down, you're putting it on a flatbed,
yes,
dropping it down,
yes,
and
yes,
and getting it there a little more economically and quite a bit faster.
Yeah, yeah, with a lot less perturbed people around you, too, trying to pass you and such.
Yeah, people don't have a whole lot of patience all the time, do they? So and so the value, I guess the value of the land, if you're looking to buy some land, if it's close by your primary farm location,
absolutely,
that just helps.
Yes, yes. So another saying is that you'll get a chance to buy the neighbor's farm probably once in a lifetime, and so if that comes available, then you're probably willing to spend more on it, not based on market value. The proximity is right beside you. You know?
Yeah. So try to make that work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Allie, I think we should take a small break.
All right. You've been listening to Reality Realty, Northumberland's 89.7 FM's local real estate talk show. Join us after this break. If you've ever considered getting into farming, we'll continue to talk with Cameron Clark about what life looks like in the farm industry.
Welcome back. This is Northumberland 89.7 FM's Reality Realty with Dale Bryant and Allie Clark, and our guest today is Cameron Clark. Cameron is a Port Hope beef cattle farmer.
So, Dad, we're talking about farmland. Do you have any environmental concerns when farmers are looking for new land?
Personally, I would probably try to shy away if I knew that a farm had land in a designated area, environmentally sensitive, or some nature like that. I would probably shy away from it, not value it as much, mainly because of perhaps in the future government involvement, where they can kind of dictate what the land use is, and then that can affect the value as well.
But we do have a lot of that in Northumberland County. We have the Oak Ridges Moraine,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
which is this big patch of land that comes from far west and,
yes,
and ends just near the borders of the eastern border of Northumberland County. So, I mean, it is fairly common for farmers to be working with this and around this as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. That there's a certain portion of farmers that kind of have to, or have put, I shouldn't say put up with it, but have dealt with this for a number of years, and it's more a matter of fact to them than it is for perhaps somebody that hasn't had any dealings with it. Then it would be very, very tough pill to swallow if I had purchased some land and was told by the government, maybe after a couple big mortgage payments, that I'm not to use the land for what I thought.
And it's not just the marine, it can be watershed issues as well, so supply water for our drinking, and there's just so many things that could come into play environmentally. So.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about factors that contribute to the value of farmland. So if you were interested in buying farmland today, how would you determine the value per acre?
Oh, probably value per acre for me personally would be about what I could afford. Not assessing a value, but it's speculation again. I keep going back to that, but farmers are real estate speculators, and they may take 30 years to realize their speculations were correct or incorrect. But it's a long term investment that to value land. You know, to say I wouldn't buy a piece of property because it was $1,000 an acre higher. Well, if the budget could afford it, I think that's how you would value it, is mm-hmm. more what you can afford to pay, as opposed to maybe because what it's worth is, and what it's perhaps going to sell for, is true market value.
Right.
What do you think today's range would be for price per acre of farmland?
Well, I could speak mainly for my area of Ward 2 in Hope Township, and I've heard land trading, well, that most recent farm upwards of over $12,000 an acre, down to some maybe perhaps marginal land further to the north. That might trade for $5,000 to $6,000 an acre, but definitely that's a big spread. But again, if it's proximity to 401, long term perhaps development, that can all have a factor. But I would say that a fair average has got to be around the $8,000 an acre mark, $7,000.
Yes, and Allie, you pulled up a good article when you were preparing for this show, and that article it talks about the Chatham-Kent area, and where there is so much farmland, and there they recently last year saw, and this article claims they saw a 40% increase in that past year. And the price of farmland is about $25,000 an acre there. And I know I've had calls from farmers out west that just want to move the entire operation eastward. And they just say it's become too ridiculous to farm there because of the values. And this article, it actually validates what I've experienced, because they're saying some farmers, particularly Mennonites, are moving out of southwestern Ontario into areas such as Quinte and Renfrew County. And I know they're investigating in Northumberland County as well, where they're saying, according to this article, they're seeing prices from $8,000 per acre to $12,000 an acre.
That those are just tremendous numbers. And I've read a few articles about the push for in southwestern Ontario for farmland, and that's kind of the only way I can put it. That is farmers. Like in our little area here, our little area of the world, I think there's a lot of outside non-farm competition mm-hmm. for land. But in that area there, it's not like there's an urban sprawl stretching down into those areas. So that value of land is farmers pushing farmers higher and higher. It's just vast amounts of equity and long-term vision to farm. I mean, the land in that area is definitely more arable and higher producing, but not double. Like you start talking double the values, that it's not double the potential, you know, that exists there.
Yeah, and really and truly, if you haven't been more or less handed down a family farm, I mean, what chance do you have when you're talking those staggering numbers?
Yes, in that area especially. I mean, it would be most difficult. It is very difficult, as I can attest to, in this area alone, let alone start talking even small chunks of land trading for seven figures. That's got to be a heck of an undertaking, unless you have a good market for perhaps higher value commodities, mm-hmm. vegetables or ginseng, you know, some like a higher input cost on the acre, as opposed to just traditional, you know, corn, soybeans, livestock.
Right, specialty crops.
Yes, yes.
Would you say in farmer talk, boutique crops?
Yeah, niche markets, like that. But it does exist for sure. I mean, we've seen a couple of farms trade in our area where Chinese, Asian mm-hmm. Vegetable farms have been probably buying a lot of the land recently in our little area. I can think of three or four.
Okay.
And now they're it's all very high labor intensive vegetables that are being taken into Toronto and such, right? Mm-hmm.
And Cameron, the farmers have been just buying up so much land, and I mentioned earlier, it almost seems like a go big sort of industry right now, but there's got to be factors, and as you said, it's a big factor in buying land is, can I afford it? I've got to think there's other factors in your purchase of land, just knowing when do we have enough, mm-hmm. and when does, even though it might be, you know, just where I want it, but when is enough land enough?
Oh, it's a competitive business. I mean, farmers are fiercely independent, and they want to grow as much as any other entrepreneur or business owner, I think. So they'll push the boundaries. I mean, mm-hmm. when is enough is enough? I guess when the bank says that's it and pulls the reins back, because debt is a major part of any farm operation. It's just the reality of debt that to expand, I mean, you have to spend money to make money, so that you're willing to you know, foresee the next 20, 30 years of massive mortgage payments to see this purchase or land purchase or expansion, see it through.
And I would think when your equipment is already being used, you know, close to 100%, your manpower 100%, although maybe a little easier to get some manpower, but quite a commitment if your equipment's being used 100% to think about that next 100 or 200 acres, and now all of a sudden you have to buy new equipment, maybe, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. now that new equipment will be underutilized.
Yes,
so
yes, yes.
It's certainly a business.
Mm-hmm. No, it is. It is for sure. It is for sure. And as much as farming is a livelihood, it's at the end of the day, it's a business that has to be treated like that.
Yeah.
The romantic idea of farming and growing your own vegetables and a few head of cattle to suffice the neighbors and such to sell, it's kind of gone by the wayside now. But like you say, it's big. It's large amounts, high dollar values that you have to be aggressive and go after if you want to expand or even survive in farming.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone was considering taking up farming, what type of lifestyle challenges would they expect?
Well, like you say, it's a lifestyle, and it's a long-term commitment. It's a lifelong commitment to farm. It's not something you could just on a whim decide that you're going to get into farming and then maybe in 3 or 4 years get back out of it. No, it's a long-term commitment. It is a lifelong, like with debt loads and physical labor and that sort of thing. It is a commitment for sure, and it has to be almost in the blood to be able to put yourself into, you know, to shortfall perhaps some social activities and such and that sort of thing, that you have to be truly a love of the farm, a love of farming.
And every now and again you hear of someone who's made it in the big city. Maybe they've been, Bay Street, Toronto, executive in, whatever floor of some big glass building, and they've filled their pockets with money. They're still relatively young, and they have this, like you said, a romance of coming out into this kind of area and starting to farm. There could be a little bit of a culture shock, couldn't there?
Yes, there certainly would be. But if you had vast amounts of money, you'd wonder why anybody would want to get into farming in the first place. But it would be done through romantic ideals and such that would they'd want to pursue that. Mm-hmm. Because just to get into it, it's not something you'll get into overnight. It definitely is a long-term, almost generational thing, that's for sure.
So what are some benefits of being in the farm industry?
Well, it's like any entrepreneur, it's you're your own boss, and you don't have to be dictated when to show up and when to come to work. I mean, you write your own work path and that sort of thing, and it's just the ability to be your own boss, I think, that is most attractive to me anyways.
In your own boss in a sense, because those cattle, they're going to tell you when they need attention, aren't they?
Yeah, they let you know sometimes at pretty unopportune times, too, that they've decided to break down a fence and go wandering across the road, too. So I guess sometimes you can be, you have to answer to a few head, but sometimes it's easier to listen to the cries of a calf than it is the cries of a boss or some such thing.
Yeah,
you get to decide how your business is run, and You talk about the hours, and I know a little bit because my grandparents, they had a farm in Hampton, and we would get those calls too.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being a young boy, and my dad would get a call. We lived in Oshawa at the time, and there'd be a call that they broke down a fence again, and so the family would all gather together and try and find where those cows were in the neighborhood. I was pretty young. I was told what side of what fence to stay on and just don't move.
Yes.
And then the other part is the hours. So how about planning for a holiday? How about planning, Cameron, to get you here as a guest?
Yes. I mean, it was probably a month long of, do it, I can't do it. And you are due. Your schedule is affected by weather and by crop conditions and that sort of thing as well, too. So I guess to say that you answer to no one probably is incorrect, but you at the end of the day, you can dictate your own pace and your own success, really. By the harder you want to work for something, the more you can achieve or attain.
And raising a family on a farm.
Terrific.
So different, isn't it?
Yes, terrific. I mean, that's how I was raised. I couldn't imagine any other raising of children other than on a farm. The lifestyle, the commitment, the hard work, life lessons are learned on the farm about, like I say, about moralities and commitments that...
Yes,
that
they
I think,
are.
I think that they can see through, though, that helps them, those lessons are learned. You know, at a young age, it's part of their lifestyle then, perhaps, too.
Yeah, disciplines, taking priorities. I can imagine at the kitchen table, when you're in a farm family, I mean, the business. Although maybe some families could have rules. I know in my family, my wife, Carolyn, she's a mortgage broker. I'm a realtor. It is very difficult not to talk about real estate.
Yes.
And we've implemented rules in the past that no business talk at the supper table for the sake of our girls. and we break those rules because things are just so crucial to being able to sit at that kitchen table with a roof over your head. And I can imagine it's the same in farming because the whole family's involved.
Yes, we are involved.
Yeah, I think maybe the kids could say sometimes that they could feel dad's stress even though they don't hear it outright, that I can carry a little bit of stress around with me at certain times of year. And sure. it is part of your everyday. It is like the kitchen supper table talk may not discuss what's happening, but they certainly know what's going on when it's harvest or it's time to run calves or get calves to pasture back and forth. You know, they probably know as much as I do.
Yes, they do.
So Ali, have you been called in to collect these cattle that broke through the fence?
Well, I've been home sometimes and I just see cattle running onto the yard.
it's part of reality of livestock is that they're probably going to get out. So there's always somebody curious to see the grass is always green on the other side of the fence, I guess.
Yeah.
So the cows mm-hmm. I certainly believe that.
Well, it's funny because I've asked Ali a few questions about your place, Cameron, and I say, Ali, do you do that? And she'll usually answer it, well, I have done it before, but now I don't do that so much.
Yeah.
Does that sound pretty accurate?
Yeah, I think as any teenager, as they grow up, maybe has visions of outside the farm things as much as you'd like them to be. Stay on the farm, I guess they have to grow and learn things for themselves.
And I think I've heard you say it before, Ali, I don't know if this is referring to farming, but you've said, that's my brother's job. Does that apply?
Yes.
If you got a brother, you may as well let them do it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Put them to work.
Yeah. Well, our time is up, and I'd just like to thank you so much, Cameron, for joining us today. It was great having you here. It's really nice to hear right from a farmer to what's the state of the nation, what's the state of farming and farm real estate, and really appreciate that insight this morning.
Oh, well, you're welcome, and thanks for having me.
And all the best for your 2016 farm season. And Ali, I would like to thank you.
No problem.
Ali, you produced a great show.
Thank you.
You brought in, you had an inside pull on bringing in a great guest. You produced a great show. Thanks for joining me
as a
co-host as well. And if you have any questions or comments about today's show or pertaining to any real estate, feel free to contact me by emailing dale@dalebryant.ca or call into the station at 905-372-2391. Don't forget to join me, Dale Bryant. I'm an active real estate broker with Royal LePage Pro Alliance Realty Brokerage. Join me next Thursday from 11 a.m. until 12 noon for Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 FM, truly local radio. Until next week, folks.